with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hey, looky here, middle of the week. Welcome to the Horn, I'm Bob Kincaid. Tickled to be here. Program note, there will be no live show tomorrow, but there will be one on Friday. Got that so far? No live show tomorrow, but live show on Friday. And very likely a live show on Monday. But then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and probably Friday are all out. Okay? I'm on the road for meetings for that one, and it's not going to be like being on Capitol Hill and being able to get home in the afternoon in time to do a show. My apologies. So, show tonight, no show tomorrow. Show Friday, show Monday, no show the remainder of next week. Okay? This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. Your home for what we like to call conversation radio. Available on a wide variety of platforms in the internet, first and foremost at headonradionetwork.com. The easiest way to get the stream, the live stream, the rerun stream, there's a listen live button there. Makes it super easy. You can also get the stream at whiterosesociety.org. That's very easy, too. Then there are the other platforms. Places like Stitcher Internet Radio. Places like Tuner Radio and TuneIn Radio. The podcast is at whiterosesociety.org, the RSS feed, as it is at iTunes. Curiously, I am informed that we have disappeared from iTunes Radio. If you guys who use iTunes Radio want to raise a ruckus with them, do feel free. I have no idea. I haven't been to iTunes Radio in years. But, yeah, I just got a note from Marty saying that The Horn has apparently disappeared in iTunes Radio. Someone needs to be kicked in the tush to get it relisted. Now, at one point in time, they moved us around some. We went from politics or talk radio to spoken word, blah, 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 blah. So I don't know. But you've got a wide variety of other options if you wish. Tuner Internet Radio, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher. It's all there. And we'd be happy to be at iTunes Radio, and have been since, what, 2006? But they may have hung up on us during the derecho, when we were unable to, when we were unable to send their rather, well, whatever. But if you wanted it, iTunes Radio, tell iTunes Radio, okay? Now, what? Okay. Ray? Really? You're listening now via iTunes Radio? Ray, if you want to fill in the details on where it may have been moved to or whatever, please let me know. That would help. Sure would help Marty. No, we call what we do here Conversation Radio, and it is, we hope, all of us, as special to you as it is to create. It only works, however, when we converse and do not leave Bob to filibobster for the best of the evening. Right? Right. Now, of course, over the course of the history of the horn, we have continued to exist by virtue of your generosity, the kind contributions of support you have made, not for purposes of purchasing anything. We are sadly lacking in swag. But because you find this worthwhile. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. It is easy to see there. It is big and yellow and just kind of puts itself up in your face. There's a banner ad right at the top of the site. We have added logins. John has added logins for Facebook, Google, WordPress, and a couple of other formats. I think Twitter may yet be coming. If you look at the site, you will find that we are 10% funded, where we, at this time of year, we should be at 25% at this time of the month, or a little over 25%. And, of course, funding speaks to our ability to pay bills and keep all of this going. And granted, the fact that I will be gone Tuesday through Friday of next week, most likely, does not bode well for our current status. In short, we need your help. In short, we need to bring in something around $400 in the next two shows. Actually, more than that, but I don't dare even hope. But still, that's only 40 people at $10 a piece, or eight, or 80 people at 5, or 20 people at 20. You get the idea. Anyway you care to slice it, we will be we'll be able to continue to get the job done, because we're still catching up. We are still catching up. But the PayPal button and the snail mail address are under the tab Contribute at the top of the website if you care to help out. Badly needed. Okay, Ray says, yeah, I went to my 25 most often played, and here you are. I don't know if you're still on their talk list or not. I will not throw in what else Ray said, but yeah, he's getting us. Jack in Shreveport, also listening on iTunes right now. So, I don't know what exactly has happened. But I do know we have reached the middle of the week. I do know that it is henceforward downhill to Friday. Hump day, as it were. But it is ever so much more than that, brethren and sistren, because this is, of course, Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Yes, indeedy. So, with every head bowed and every eye closed, we're going to pass the plate amongst the congregation. There's a PayPal button in the bottom and the snail mail address, and you may help out any way you can, but just remember, help is indeed the way that this continues. So we will call forth the Minister of Music. Brother Minister of Music, if you would come forward. We will have our offertory hymn, and then we'll get it all started. Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Yeah. Whoever said religion should be free?
How? Oh, Hutts up, crossing on the river, ride a brawl of a brawl of suet. Hallelujah, brethren and sistren. I love you. Welcome, welcome to Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. This here is the Cathedral of Common Sense. Now, get out there and get them sinners in and get them deacons in. Get them to mash their cigarettes out and come on in. Come on in through the vestibule, brother and sister, and come past that 20-year-old bowl of dried-out, desiccated butter mints and come on down that blood-red carpet and fall on your knees in front of the altar and lay your hands upon the subwoofer, brethren and sistren, and feel the healing rays of common sense flowing through you from on high. I am Archpope Imperial Rabbi, super imam, animated animist, articulate atheist, Bob Kincaid, and this is the Cathedral of Common Sense. Brethren and sisters, it is time. For our worship services. The collection plate has come back, and I have happy news to report. Thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly for the 10 slots in the Thrifty 250 that have been filled up. It is much appreciated. Very much appreciated. Thank you. We begin this evening, brethren and sistren, as is so sadly often the case, with the fine, fine bigots from the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi. Yes, indeedy. Yes, indeedy. Brian Fisher, whom we have talked about in the past, I suspect, brethren and sistren, that he is just desperately trying to keep himself. He wants to go big time. He wants to get all Rush Limbaugh and have him a big old Oxycontin Jones and a woman in a pit and all those and Dominican all-boy vacations with illicit Viagra prescriptions like Rush done got. He wants to go to the big time, brethren and sisters, and he's working on it. The things he has said have populated Prayer Meeting Wednesdays for quite possibly years now, going back to greatest hits like Let's Kill All the Grizzly Bears. But now, you remember the other night? It was another fundamentalist, well-financed fundamentalist broadcaster who claimed that it is legal in the United States to kidnap little girls on the playground, rape them, take them across state lines, get them an illicit abortion, and then drop them back at the playground on the swing set, and not a word be said because every last bit of that is legal in the United States. Oh, no, that wasn't a religious broadcaster. That was Iowa's 5th District Congressman Steve King. Whew. Feel a little better if it had been a broadcaster. No, that was a real live oath-taking, oath-swearing member of the House of Representatives of the United States of America, constitutionally and duly appointed. Steve King. Well, apparently, Brian Fisher was listening. Because Brian Fisher follower of the Prince of Peace, the Lamb of God, Brian Fisher. Mercy. Brian Fisher wants to get a nationwide conspiracy started to kidnap children. Because Steve King done said it's legal. Really. Now this man, I don't know, this man hates gay folks like the devil hates light. No, this man hates gay folks like the devil hates air conditioning. And to prove how much he hates gay folks, he naturally does not want gay folks to be raising children. Even though gay couples are successfully raising children all over the country. And have, to one degree or another, throughout this nation's long history. Because, well, it's just a matter of what the closet, whether the closet door is open or shut. There's been plenty of gay folks raising children. Brian Fisher of the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi, wants to start kidnapping children of gay parents. Really? Really? Someone let Brian Fisher have a Twitter account. And he started putting it to use. If you want to see the filth that spews out of the thin gray settlings between the ears of Brian Fisher that passed for brains, he's at Brian with a Y, B-R-Y-A-N, you know, like the wieners. Brian J. Fisher, F-I-S-C-H-E-R. At Brian J. Fisher on Twitter. And he tweeted last night, why we need an underground railroad to deliver innocent children from same-sex households. He wants children being raised by same-sex parents to be kidnapped from them. Simply because the parents are gay. Not because they're being abused. There are no qualifiers in these tweets. If a child is being blocked. But wait, even if there were qualifiers, it would still be advocacy of kidnapping. Then again, Christian missionaries have a habit of doing that to children around the world. How many different indigenous cultures were plagued by so-called Christian missionaries who took them from their homes and put them in schools? I mean, Canada had this policy. I mean, it's government policy. Canada had this policy, Australia had this policy, the United States had the policy. I think it went up and down the Americas and in Asia and South Asia, where children would be taken and re-educated properly and Christianly and lost their language. I read an article in the, I think, New York Times the other day about the preservation of a language from Native peoples in Oregon that is down to like 4 or 5 Native speakers, but they've salvaged enough of the language to create an online database of it. But the language disappeared because it was beaten out of them. It was beaten out of the children by followers of Jesus Christ. Texas Betsy noting, the state of Texas will allow me to be a foster parent as a single mom, but if I had a gay partner, no way. She also notes that in Africa, big time in Africa, Christians repurposing innocent children. Merciful God. Ray noting, savages. Child abduction. Yes, they do. Ray has a truly, magnificently, monumentally wicked sense of humor. And he says, okay, let him start with a chini. See how that works out for him. That would be funny. That would be funny indeed. Ray, articulate agnostic, you don't fool me. There I was, stumbling. That was the word I was looking for. Thank you, Ray. Day late and a dollar short. Story of my life. But seriously, Brian Fisher supports, among other people, Lisa Miller. Lisa Miller declared herself ex-gay and then kidnapped her daughter away to Central America to keep her former partner from having any custody rights. You know, parenting is hard work, and to be separated from one's children, especially intentionally, is a kind of hell that nothing promised by the church can ever match. Brian Fisher supports that. A mother who kidnapped her own daughter away to keep another parent from having anything to do with her. And who can speak the minds of what it means to be ex-gay? The shame that must drive that kind of a sad decision, unable to be simply who one was born to be. But Brian Fisher, follower of the Lamb, would gladly see children ripped away from people whom they love. You know, a parent, parents, to be put on an alleged underground railroad to be kept away from their parents simply because of how and who their parents love. Now, this is without regard to the incredible indignity, the incredible historical slur of referring to the kidnapping of children from gay parents as the Underground Railroad. We know our history here, right? Right. We know our history, and we know what the Underground Railroad was. And we know what a perilous effort and what a heroic effort it was to try to get, if not all, at least some slaves away from the brutal South. More on that in a moment. Away from old Massa and into Canada, where they could experience freedom. Because remember, if you were paying attention to the Prism West Virginia American History Series, if you were paying attention yesterday, you would have been reminded that one of the signal declarations of the Dred Scott decision, one of those nightmare decisions that has periodically come puking forth from the Supreme Court of the United States, was that no man or woman of color who had become free in this country and was living free was, in any sense, a citizen of the United States. Whoa! Think about that for a minute. This is at a time when Frederick Douglass is crisscrossing the country. What, 1856, 1858? Frederick Douglass is crisscrossing the country talking about the utter barbarity, the inhuman monstrosity of human bond slavery. And Chief Justice Roger Taney declared that he, Frederick Douglass, was not a citizen. Born free or made free, the Dred Scott decision declared that no person of color could ever be a citizen of the United States of America. Do we realize that? Do we realize the fullness of the hatred necessary to reach a conclusion like that? And so, Brian Fisher has spat upon the noble and heroic heritage of the real Underground Railroad to declare that children should be kidnapped. Now, what do we do, and this is the overarching social question involved, what do we do when people start acting on that? When fundamentalist right-wing bigots, I don't know, maybe somebody who's a big fan of Dan Caffey, perhaps, over at Chick-fil-A. What do we do when they start kidnapping children? Well, we know what Brian Fisher will do. Well, my friends, I'm merely a humble talk show host, and I only talk about theoretical ideas. I certainly never suggested that anyone should actually kidnap the child of a gay couple and spirit them away so that the couple, the parents, could never see them again. I certainly had no intention for... No, I'm merely an entertainer. Isn't that these right-wing swine usually excuse themselves? Oh, Jim hits one out of the park. Yeah, what? We're going to have an anti-gay Underground Railroad? And Jim says, what, with a series of Sandusky safe houses? Ray, under the subject line, Jesus wept, says, okay, take a cherished child away from those that love them and hand them over to mentally ill assholes to be abused in so many ways. God, what a country. But see, this also engenders another level of discussion about the things that Brian Fisher says. Why, because it is all too facile to say, well, yeah, you know, this is America, and he's got him some of that there freedom of speech. I reckon he said we just got to let him say these things. Yeah, First Amendment freedom of speech can't be suppressing or repressing or obsessing over anything Brian Fisher says with his freedom of speech. I feel like I ought to be selling pudding pops right now, about halfway to Bill Cosby. But it isn't. And this, in turn, of course, goes back to that ongoing why we have it. Well, we have it because it's, you know, ends-based analysis. The right wing likes so-called constitutional originalism because it permits them to more easily reach their desired goals than actually having to analyze public policy and what is right and wrong in this society. I got to thinking about this yesterday, and I'm going to try to make sure that I double back and finish this thought, but this is a little thought experiment. I tried doing it and found it rather difficult. Maybe just the jotting pad or piece of, you know, whatever, back of a bill envelope or whatever. Sit down, or stand up, who the hell am I? And make some notes on what you think this country will be like in 200 years. How will we, what will transportation be like? Will we have electricity? Will there be a colony on the moon or maybe Mars? Will the Koch brothers by then, or the descendants thereof, be mining the asteroids? Will this mountaintop property that I sit on in West Virginia be beachfront property by then? Do that little thought experiment and tell me what, or don't tell me. If you want to share with me, that's fine. I'd love to see it. But see what happens to you when you start trying to think, what will the world be like in 200 years? It is not easy to do. The real geniuses out there, and they usually reside within the realm of science fiction, who think about these things, reach broadly different results and conclusions. And some prove to be more right than others. Robert A. Heinlein, for instance, the great science fiction author, expected us to have a, or posited that we might very well have a prison colony on the moon by now. He also posited flying cars by now. But some of the other things, remember on, and for instance, remember the original Star Trek, where they were putting what were then very, very advanced pieces of technology, i.e. cassette tapes. They were feeding cassette tapes into the computer system of the Enterprise, remember? Some things are more prosaic than others. Some things are meta, some things are micro, some things are mega. In terms of vision. But once you've done that, then put yourself in the place of the framers of the Constitution and the founders of this country. And ask yourself if there is any evidence to suggest that they even thought about the future of this country, and what they thought, if they did, about the future of this country. There's not a lot out there. But, for instance, Thomas Jefferson saw people expanding across the continent in the fledgling United States. Arguably, his first vice president, Aaron Burr, had a similar vision in a different direction. Interestingly, Jefferson said that the Louisiana Purchase, and, you know, that didn't even take in the American Southwest. But he said Jefferson said the Louisiana Purchase would provide living space and expansion space for the United States, to quote Jefferson, unto the 1,000th generation. Now, how many generations have actually passed since Jefferson said that? You know, 212 years. How many have passed? What's the average measure? 40 years to a generation? 30 years to a generation? Yeah. and we've largely populated the continent. Even in places where it couldn't be populated before. Enlightenment or no enlightenment, the framers and founders were not much good at turning deserts into living space. But we did that. And so, we see, I think, the utter fraud that is constitutional originalism. You know, what fat Tony Scalia uses when he says things like there's no constitutional right to not be executed by the state if you happen to be innocent. You don't have the right not to be executed if you happen to be innocent. There's no constitutional right. These goons, all these originalist goons, say that the Constitution has to be some sort of thing that's carved in stone and can't change and can't address the growing needs of a growing, changing nation. And yet there's Article 5 of the Constitution, which provides the means by which we amend it. Now, if you want the Constitution to be forever static, then why do you make a means of changing it? And that's one of those that you can't get a satisfying answer from people like Fat Tony Scalia for. Because there isn't a satisfying answer. Now, why are we talking about this? Because one of the things that the right wing loves to do is say, well, there weren't any gay people in 1783, 1787. There weren't any gay people then. Of course there were. They were simply treated more brutally. At least in European society. You know, it was a running gag among Jesuit missionaries that when they first got to Polynesia about that time, that none of the Polynesian cultures had a word for homosexuality. They just saw love to be, you know, love. They did not learn what homosexuality was as a separate form of sexuality until it was taught to them by the Jesuit missionaries, who taught it to them as a sin. Doesn't that just tell us a boatload? But Brian Fisher wants to equate the children of gay couples as being the same as slaves, beaten under the hot sun of Alabama. A precious child or children raised in love, raised in caring homes, given everything, as parents tend to do, that they possibly can give, is the same as an African person brutalized in the hot southern sun for not chopping enough cotton. Yeah. Brian Fisher says, that custody rulings that allow same-sex couples to continue custody. That's judicial kidnapping. What has him all head up is the case of a woman by the name of Lisa Miller, as I noted, who kidnapped her daughter. To Nicaragua. To keep her former same-sex partner from having any sort of custody rights. This is what Brian Fisher said. No kidnapping involved in Lisa Miller case. She left the U.S. to keep her natural biological daughter from being kidnapped. In Lisa Miller case, I'm advocating against judicial kidnapping in favor of keeping daughter with her own mother. In Lisa Miller case... Articles, Brian. Articles. The, a, an, these, those. Lesbian who wanted sole custody of the daughter had no legal or biological relationship to the girl. If any kidnapping involved in Lisa Miller case, it's judges stealing a child from her mother and giving her to a stranger. What happens when the so-called stranger is sane and the biological parent is deeply mentally ill? Little Isabella, who was kidnapped to Nicaragua, grew up calling Lisa Miller Mommy and Janet Jenkins Mama. They had their civil union dissolved in 2004, and family court in Vermont gave visitation rights to Janet Jenkins. Lisa Miller moved to Virginia and used the bigoted courts of the Old Dominion. Remember, the same state that gave us Loving versus Virginia that said that a person of color and a person of pale skin could not wed. She used that court system to keep Ms. Jenkins from seeing her daughter, legally her daughter, for 2 years. But even the Virginia Supreme Court had to take cognizance of the fact that Vermont still had jurisdiction of the case and compelled visitation, at which point Lisa Miller abducted the daughter, Isabella, to Nicaragua. She was abducted to Nicaragua. And I know this is going to come as somewhat of a shock to you. She was abducted to Nicaragua via a network run by the Mennonites. I used to think well of the Mennonites. They were kind of like the Amish. There was a big... There was a big community of them in south central Tennessee near Lawrenceburg. And Lordy, you could get the best sorghums... And they did beautiful woodwork, and they made fried pies to die for, and they drove buggies and had them funky, men had them funky beards. The women wore little bonnets and stuff. But then you find out that, yes, that culture is abusive of its women, too. The Mennonites aided and abetted Lisa Miller in abducting her child to Nicaragua. Here's Brian Fisher explaining it all for us.
I want to keep a judge from kidnapping this woman's daughter and putting her in an abusive household. That's what I want to do. I want the mom to be able to keep her biological daughter, her natural daughter, and be able to protect that child from an environment in which was abusive to her child.
You know, it's one thing to say that someone, that a household is abusive. It is another thing to prove it. In Brian Fisher's mind, it is abusive merely to be gay. And that is the center of all of this. This poor woman, Lisa Miller, was convinced by someone at some the fundamentalist hellhole that it was possible to be ex-gay.
Her child would come home from weekends with the former, with the lesbian ex-partner, and the child would have nightmares. The daughter would be wetting her bed. The daughter would be trying to harm herself. She would be indicating that she had been sexually abused. She would report to her mom that this lesbian had threatened to take her away from her mom. And the mom said, look, I can't put my daughter back into that circumstance again. I cannot do it.
Yeah. Of course, the God forbid Brian Fisher should give the other side of the story. But anyone who's ever been near an ugly divorce knows that sometimes adults are not very good at behaving in adult fashion with regard to the children. Nightmares? Well, where were the nightmares taking place? Oh, look, they were taking place at Lisa Miller's home. Maybe that's because the child was terrified of Lisa Miller. Bedwetting upon returning home that she wasn't doing on a custody visit over a weekend. Listen. You know, we tend to talk about marriage equality as if it is a walk in the park. It is not. All human relationships do not work out. And it doesn't necessarily have to be because mommy turned out to be ex-gay and mama stayed what God made her. Now, you tell me where a child is likely to receive greater psychic damage. Among a bunch of fundamentalists constantly going on about gay people? Or with a parent who just happens to be the object of all of that scorn? You tell me where the abuse is happening. Now, remember, Brian Fisher is a fundamentalist so-called Christian. That means, by definition, he is a liar. Onward to dystopia with a question. How come these assholes like Brian Fisher and James Dobson have to focus on other people's family instead of focusing on their own damn family? Because it is much easier to focus on someone else's family, because then you can propose solutions that will never be put into action. Well, except that part where James Dobson advocated that men take little boys into the shower and show them their erect penises. That one got put into play, didn't it? How'd that work out, Doc? Yeah, right.
I have a responsibility, a God-given responsibility, to protect this child from that environment.
He has a God-given responsibility. Well, when did God give it to you, Brian? Tell us all about it while we're getting the blowgun ready and putting the Thorazine dart in it to blow into your neck so maybe God will quit talking to you. Or maybe your id or your ego or your superego or a demon or a houseplant or the family dog or whatever it is that's talking to you will quit talking to you. You'll feel so much better, Brian.
The judge said to her, if you don't put your daughter back in that environment, I am going to take her away from you and I am going to give her permanently sole custody to this lesbian, to your former lesbian partner who had...
This lesbian. He cannot even refer to her as a human being. This lesbian? You know, I'm pretty sure... Now, most of these things are under seal. You can't just go and get into divorce proceedings. But I'm pretty sure that if we were to get the transcripts of the hearings where the family court judge in Vermont that was admonishing Ms. Miller, we would find out that he never not once referred to Ms. Jenkins as this lesbian. Plaintiff and defendant, petitioner and respondent. But this lesbian? I don't think so. And that enough is that is enough to show you the kind of dirty fundamentalist liar that Brian Fisher is. But it's not just Brian Fisher. This is a cancer that has already grown, already spread, already fully metastasized through the fundamentalist community. And you know what? Here's the fun part. Sexuality did not play any role in the decision-making process or the admonitions of the family court. What this has to do with is a litigant who is unwilling to follow the fully jurisdictional and completely legal and proper orders of the court. Most family courts in the United States, and I don't know of any that don't do this, but I don't know all the laws. Most family courts in the United States take, in a child custody matter, take the well-being of the child as as the court's first concern. And there are presumptions about the well-being of the child. For instance, that even after a divorce has taken place, it is good for the child to have contact with both parents. And when one of the two parents refuses to grant the lawfully ordered visitation, and this was just weekend visitation. This wasn't joint custody. This wasn't 1 week on, 1 week off. None of that. It's just weekend visitation. Which for the non-custodial parent is something approaching hell. To get 2 days of a child's life out of a week, or every 2 weeks, or every month. To get a couple of weeks in the summer and alternating Thanksgivings and alternating Christmases and alternating Easters. It's hell. But Lisa Miller could not bear, because I'm sure by this time, I grant I'm speculating, but you know what? These things don't happen without support doctrines and support networks like these Mennonites, like the Manhattan Declaration, that tells fundamentalist so-called Christians that they may violate the law if that's what it takes for them to uphold their bigotries and to file that away under the guise of conscience. That's what happened here. Lisa Miller had people preying upon her mind, and in turn she began to use the daughter from her marriage as a pawn in a vast and twisted manifestation of religious hatred.
No legal, no biological relationship whatsoever with the child. Now, in my judgment, the
liar! No legal relationship with the child. There was obviously an order entered by the court that enshrined a legal relationship with the child. Liar. Liar. He lies. Because he can. Because in the sickness of his mind, it is justified to lie in service to his invisible, imaginary God.
The mom had no choice at that point. The judge said, I'm going to take her away from you if you don't send her, if you don't comply with my visitation order. I don't know what other choice the mom had. I mean,
well, here, you're some damn dim-witted right-wing fundamentalist Christian. Let me help. Her choice was to obey the law.
Her choice was to follow the order that had been crafted by a competent judge of a court of jurisdiction over the case and do as the judge said.
You know, there is that whole business in St. Paul about, you know, obeying the law.
That's what her choice was, you damn moron.
Moms have a sacred, solemn duty, a responsibility to God to look out for the welfare of their kids.
See, she has a sacred, solemn duty to look, and responsibility to God. And whatever it is that God says can be made up at a moment's notice and on the fly. Jesus, this is sickening. And out of this one case, perhaps more sickening, out of this one case has come an argument that Christians all over America should begin kidnapping gay children, and I guess turning them over to Mormons who won't let them have buttons. God Almighty. And we're putting up with this crap in the 21st century. This isn't the 18th century. Why we need an underground railroad to deliver innocent children from same-sex households. And you can't even hold this creep accountable for his actions. He has just entered into a conspiracy. And there is no one who will hold him accountable, because if you charged him with the criminal conduct that he just committed, he would say, "You're persecuting me for my faith in Jesus." Evil bastard. And that's what I was getting at earlier. This man's conduct in urging people to kidnap other people's children is criminal. There is no absolute First Amendment right to free speech. And this is not even attenuated. He is saying, we need it, go do it. And I'm a jealous defender of the First Amendment. But this man is encouraging people to go forth and commit both state and federal felonies and to do violence, because kidnapping is violence. In the 21st century, where electronic, digital, computerized, internet-driven, broadcast, terrestrial, satellite, yada, 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 communications go all the way around the globe in a matter of seconds, this is the digital equivalent of yelling fire in a crowded theater. And what Brian Fisher has committed is criminal incitement. Just is.
Oh, but you see, the original intent of the Constitution didn't take into account
electricity. No, of course not. Franklin had barely just discovered electricity. Nikola Tesla wouldn't come along for another century or so.
And therein lies the fraud of original intent analysis. and it is so dangerous. It is so very terrifyingly dangerous. Especially in the hands of the followers of some right-wing version of the saving grace of Jesus Christ. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. We are 12 and a half slots into that 40 slots we need to fill, and I thank you very kindly. We all thank you, because that means we finish the month and we get to do September. Because just like most American households, we live month to month. Thank you. This is the Horn. We'll be back, hopefully, with your calls. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email, of course, comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. Okie dokie, okie dokie.
Privilege of the richest people in the land. Don't you understand? I don't give a damn for you. I don't give a damn for you. The truth. I lie because I can. It's not stealing if it's legal. Let's just change the rules. Besides, it's middle management's fault. If they can't cook my books right, they're fired, they're fools. Let them be the ones who get caught. Taxes are for losers. I'm a winner, you see. Money is the magic stuff that set me free. And I lie. Why? Because I can. Privilege of the richest people in the land. Don't you understand? I don't give a damn for you. I don't give a damn for you. That's the truth. I lie because I can. Because I can. I lie because I can.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
4 minutes past the hour. Email coming in from Ray. He says, I got blisters on my B finger. That's the finger that types all the words that begin with B, like bastards. Ray adds, there you go. Oh my God, there you go with the obscure but apropos music again. Yeah, isn't it wonderful? That, of course, is from the magnificent album Americanitis by Will Kimbrough. There's not a bad song on that album, and a lot of them that are just plain flat out brilliant. Will Kimbrough, K-I-M-B-R-O-U-G-H, and I assume I don't have to spell Will. Americanitis, A-M-E-R-I-C-A-N-I-T-I-S, Americanitis. Can I move on to the next round of the spelling bee now? The song, of course, is called I Lie. And it really does. It just takes in the full filth of the right wing. As do other tunes on the album, like Less Polite. I haven't played Less Polite in a while. I probably should. That album needs to... Well, Will is a tremendous talent. He was even on this program once upon a time. And... He's another one of those good Southern progressives that are such a joy when you run across them. Americanitis. The album was released in 2006. Yeah, 2006. He continues to do amazing work. I'm trying to be better about telling folks what the music is, because a lot of you like to go and get it for yourself. And I highly recommend purchasing that album. It'll be the best ten or so bucks you've spent in a while. You'll listen to it over and over and over again. Jim asking, what do you expect? When on H2, there are programs of instruction on the best weapons to kill zombies. Don't think I know. I don't watch enough television to know what H2 is. But there's all manner of stupidity out there. You got paranoid people out there, stocking firearms for the zombie apocalypse when there are very, very real human beings being plotted against, marked for persecution, and yes, death by the right-wingers who pretend to follow Jesus Christ. Wow. Thank you for another $10 contribution that just rolled in. 13 and a half. This is good. Maybe we'll be paying some bills. Now, I had mentioned something earlier. I found this over at Mother Jones. Our news ninja Gene sent it along to me. And it goes hand in hand with the story coming out of Louisiana. You've heard this by now, I'm sure. But this being prayer meeting Wednesday, it fits in perfectly because it's being driven not by any sort of educational policy, but by educational ideology as driven by the right-wing religion industry. Remember, Louisiana has for a governor a man who once assaulted a woman in the name of exercising demons that were in her. Really? Louisiana has a brand spanking new voucher system that will pump taxpayer dollars into the religion industry and the truly bizarre schools the religion industry runs. See, it's such a disconnect for me to sit in classrooms and listen to this earnest examinations of our history that are reality-based and primary source document-driven, and then to turn around and come back to the, I guess, real world. Other nations have to deal with some of this, but they don't deal with it in the volume we do. Again, a question to our international audience, our international members of the Horn family. Australia, Great Britain, France, Germany, Italy, Greece, Spain, Japan, China, Taiwan, Costa Rica, Brazil, Argentina, Bolivia. I mean, you'd be surprised where we've got listeners. Hello, Egypt! India. Most of those countries, I hazard a guess, would not tolerate in the 21st century taking taxpayer dollars and pumping them into religion schools. I know there are some instances that are a slight variation. In Great Britain the former Cat Stevens is involved in an Islamic school for Islamic children who were otherwise being tormented in public school. But to take an entire province's tax dollars and say, we'll give you a bonus if you don't want to go to public school, and we'll pay for you to go to religion school instead. Well, that's what has started in Louisiana under Bobby, whose name is not Bobby, Jindal. Just like Mitt Romney's name isn't Mitt, it's Willard. Just like Mitch McConnell, just like his name isn't Mitch. Just like Joe Wilson of what is it with these Republicans and these damned aliases? No, his real name is Piyush. Louisiana Governor Piyush Jindal. It's just his name. It's just like Willard is just Willard Romney's name, and Addison is just Mitch McConnell's name. Can you imagine what a hissy? I mean, the right wing has had enough of a hissy over Barack Obama as it is. If he had run for president as Barry.
What's he trying to hide, his true Muslim nature?
But then again, we had the story last night about right-wingers fantasizing of him being beaten to death by 72 Virginians. Right? Sure. But no, these twisted right-wingers who are hell-bent, and I do mean that in its literal sense, if there is one, they're bent toward it. Their hell-bent desire to make us all believe as they do, to make us all as sick in the head as they are, And wait till you hear what gets taught in these religious charter schools, these religion industry voucher schools in Louisiana. Yeah, this might be a strap-in moment. But not everybody will get to go. Because there are some students who happen to have vaginas. Yeah, you know, half the population. If it just happens that you go to the Delhi Charter School in Delhi, Louisiana, and have a vagina, you are liable to being yanked out of school for suspicion of pregnancy. No, really. Suspicion of pregnancy. This is a direct quote from the Delhi Charter School in Delhi, Louisiana. Direct quote from their student handbook. If an administrator or teacher suspects a student is pregnant, a parent conference will be held. The school reserves the right to require any female student to take a pregnancy test to confirm whether or not the suspected student is in fact pregnant. The school further reserves the right to refer the suspected student to a physician of its choice. Huh? I thought that Obama, communist Obamacare, it's going to make you go to the government doctor. If the test indicates that the student is pregnant, the student will not be permitted to attend classes on the campus of Delhi Charter School. She will immediately have an A appliqued to all of her school uniforms and be sent to the Pregnant Girls Shaming Academy. Okay, I added that last part. If a student is determined to be pregnant, my God, she's determined to be pregnant. If a student is determined to be pregnant and wishes to continue to attend Delhi Charter School, the student will be required to pursue... That's some just shitty drafting, you know? If a student is determined to be pregnant. You know, honey, we've tried to keep you from being pregnant, but it seems that you're determined to be pregnant. If a student is determined to be pregnant and wishes to continue to attend Delhi Charter School, the student will be required to pursue a course of home study that will be provided by the school. Any student who is suspected of being pregnant and who refuses to submit to a pregnancy test shall be treated as a pregnant student. Really? In America? But I thought these people loved the fetuses. So what if she's, what if she is suspected of being pregnant but runs out and takes the morning after pill or the OU812 pill or goes and gets, an abortion? They're kind of encouraging the abortion there, aren't they? These right-wing fundamentalists. If home study opportunities are not acceptable, the student will be counseled to seek other educational opportunities. Now, never mind how many rules and laws and constitutional amendments this just goes tap dancing on. Yeah, Marty makes an observation here. Somehow I doubt the charter school will pay for the doctor's pregnancy exam. I doubt it, too. Yes, Ray, yes, at the new Delhi Charter School of Delhi, Louisiana, Adele would be expelled for suspicion of pregnancy. Go figure. So, teacher doesn't like you. Yes, this is a high school, Texas Betsy. Any chance of having married 18-year-olds in attendance? I had a few of those in the high school where I worked. You know what? I'm guessing getting married gets you thrown out of this charter school because it's a very special school. But this is all part and parcel of the new law that privatizes public law and public education in new law that try it again, Bob. This is all part and parcel of the new law that privatizes public education in Louisiana. Because the whole reason it was done was to bring the Bible into the classroom. Because all these weirdo fundamentalists with their fantasies of persecution, their paranoid fantasies of persecution, are determined that we must believe as they do. Yeah, well, you know that, or we need a good stoning. The state of Louisiana will spend literally tens of millions of dollars to take poor and middle class students out of the public schools and dump them into the hell of religious indoctrination passing for education. So, it turns out that many of these so-called charter schools, these private schools, 119 mostly Christian participating schools. An individual by the name of Zach Coplin, a sophomore in college with apparently a functioning brain, decided to see what it was that these children in Louisiana would be subjected to in the way of learning, or alleged teaching. The first thing you have to understand is that a whole bunch of these schools rely for texts, not on, you know, textbooks provided by the, written by the heathen secular humanists, but instead on a series of textbooks produced by a Becca Book, that's a whole curriculum, or Bob Jones University Press. Just the mere mention of Bob Jones University tells you that this is not going to have a happy ending, doesn't it? So anyway, taking a look at those two curricula, Zach Coplin, wanted to find out what Louisiana children would be taught in these religion industry ignorance mills. Well, let's see. One of the facts that is taught in the books is that the Loch Ness Monster is real. Don't send me emails about you believing the Loch Ness Monster is real, too, or what kind of dinosaur it might actually be. It is unproven and therefore cannot be offered as fact. But there are some real gems in A Becca Book and Bob Jones University Press. From the book Life Science, 3rd edition, by Bob Jones University Press, copyright 2007. Quote, Bible-believing Christians cannot accept any evolutionary interpretation. Dinosaurs and humans were definitely on the earth at... Definitely! Dinosaurs and humans were definitely on the earth at the same time and may have even lived side by side within the past few thousand years. I wish I was reading you something that I had made up just to, so I could say, ha ha, gotcha, fake, made that up, not real. No, it's real. I read that first one when News Ninja Gene sent this to me. And I thought immediately of the patron prophet of this program, Bill Hicks. Let's see if this is what I think it is.
I mean, if the world's 12,000 years old and the Bible covers it, Why didn't someone bring up fucking dinosaurs? You'd think someone would have brought that up somewhere in the goddamn book. And Jesus and the disciples walked down the path towards Nazareth. But oh, the trail was blocked by a giant brontosaurus with a splinter in his paw. And the disciples did run a screaming when a big fucking lizard lord. I'm sure gonna mention this in my book, said Luke. Well, I'm sure gonna mention it in my book, said Matthew. I'm not sure what I saw, said Thomas. Timothy nudged him. It was a big fucking lizard, said Thomas. But Jesus was unafraid. And he took the splinter from the brontosaurus paw, and the brontosaurus became his friend. And Jesus sent him to Scotland, where he lived in a lock, oh, so many years, attracting fat American families with their fat fucking dollars to look for the Loch Ness Monster. And oh, the Scotch did praise the Lord. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord.
Yeah. But no, that's quite real. Somebody really committed that really typed that out, and it was really published in a hardcover textbook. Dinosaurs and humans were definitely on the Earth at the same time and may have even lived side by side within the past few thousand years. Then there's number two. Dragons were totally real. Is it possible that a fire-breathing animal really existed? Today, some scientists are saying yes. They have found large chambers in certain dinosaur skulls. You know, I got a feeling that right now, Lottie in the chat room, and people like Psychoticus in the chat room are just running screaming. Today, some scientists are saying yes. Some scientists, you know, like some people on Radio Rwanda Fox, they have found large chambers in certain dinosaur skulls. The large skull chambers could have contained special chemical-producing glands. They might have also contained cotton candy. When the animal forced the chemicals out of its mouth or nose, these substances may have combined and produced fire and smoke. Life Science, 3rd edition, Bob Jones University Press, 2007. Then there's this one. Anybody out there? Okay, before we do this one, let's have a little romper room hand-raising session. Anybody got Native American blood in them? First Peoples? You know, Indians? Yeah, you're going to love this one. God used the Trail of Tears to bring many Indians to Christ. You know, through death! They died and they went, and Jesus looked at them and said, I know you not, for you aren't saved and you don't have a personal relationship with me, and off to hell you go! That's from America, Land That I Love, Teacher's Edition, A Becca Book, 1994. But don't worry, it's not just the Indians. The Africans get theirs, too. Africa is a continent with many needs. It is still in the need of the gospel. Really? Really? The gospel? The gospel's first on that list? Not freaking food? Not eradication of debilitating diseases that are burning the continent up? Africa is a continent with many needs. It is still in need of the gospel. Only about 10% of Africans can read and write. In some areas, the mission schools have been shut down by communists who have taken over the government. Old World History and Geography in Christian Perspective, 3rd edition, A Becca Book, 2004. But then again, lucky, lucky, happy Africans, some of them got to come to America for free. Just not free. From United States History for Christian Schools, 2nd edition, Bob Jones University Press, 1991. A few slaveholders were undeniably cruel. Examples of slaves beaten to death were not common, neither were they unknown. The majority of slaveholders treated their slaves well. Also from United States History for Christian Schools, 3rd edition, Bob Jones University Press, 2001. The Klan in some areas of the country tried to be a means of reform, fighting the decline in morality and using the symbol of the cross. Klan targets were bootleggers, wife beaters, and immoral movies. Wait, I think we're missing an adjective. Black bootleggers, black wife beaters, black immoral... No, there weren't... In some communities, it achieved a certain respectability as it worked with politicians. United States History for Christian Schools, 3rd edition, Bob Jones University Press, 2001. And you know how the legislature of Virginia declared that sea level rise is liberal code? Yeah, same thing with Great Depression. Perhaps this from United States History, Heritage of Freedom, 2nd edition, A. Becca Book, 1996. Perhaps the best-known work of propaganda to come from the Depression was John Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath. Really? It was propaganda? I thought it was a novel. Other forms of propaganda included rumors of mortgage foreclosures, mass evictions, and hunger riots, and exaggerated statistics representing the number of unemployed and homeless people in America. It's all just made up. It was made up. That thing that my grandmother used to teach me about how the Republicans promised them three meals a day and they delivered them, you know, oatmeal, miss a meal, and skip a meal. Yeah, that was just made up liberalism. Then there's American Government and Christian Perspective, 2nd edition, A. Becca Book, 1997. Ignoring 3,500 years of Judeo-Christian civilization, religion, morality, and law, the Burger Court held that an unborn child was not a living person, but rather the property of the mother, much like slaves were considered property in the 1857 case of Dred Scott versus Sanford. Oh, my Jesus. American Government in Christian Perspective, 2nd edition, A. Becca Book, 1997. It is no wonder that Satan hates the family and has hurled his venom against it in the form of communism. It really, 1997. And then the one I take most personally. These here is what you call fighting words. I think if I could find the author, my nonviolence would be sorely tested. They'd at least get a good screaming at. There's a lot of people you can say things, a lot of things about in this country. This from Elements of Literature for Christian Schools, Bob Jones University, 2001. Both of these passages. Twain's outlook was both self-centered and ultimately hopeless. Twain's skepticism was clearly not the honest questioning of a seeker of truth, but the deliberate defiance of a confessed rebel. That's almost enough to make me cry. This is a man who had watched by the end of his life had seen his beloved wife and three of his four children perish. He was not Job. He did not thank the Lord for murdering his family. How can you make a determination of whether someone's skepticism is on the honest questioning or deliberate defiance? How dare this hack, whoever wrote this piece of crap book in 2001? And then there's poor Miss Emily. Several of Emily Dickinson's poems show a presumptuous attitude concerning her eternal destiny and a veiled disrespect for authority in general. Throughout her life, she viewed salvation as a gamble, not a certainty. Although she did view the Bible as a source of poetic inspiration, she never accepted it as an inerrant guide to life. Well, maybe that's because it wasn't her religion to hold it that way. I imagine, being a New Englander, well, isn't it safe to assume that Emily Dickinson was raised in the Congregationalist tradition? And remember the Talking Barbie? Many of the women in this audience may have had Talking Barbie at some time in their childhood. Some of the guys may have too, and there's no harm in that. But remember how you could pull the string in the back of Talking Barbie? I imagine she just has a button now. And she'd say things like, "Math is hard." This from the website abecca.com. Unlike the modern math theorists, our science-driven folks are going to be running screaming at it. Lottie, Psychoticus, you guys, strap in, okay? This is not going to be okay. Mr. Gibson, yeah. Here we go.
Unlike the modern math theorists who believe that mathematics,
When, how does the word believe and the word mathematics ever belong in the same sentence? There's no believing in math!
Unlike the modern math theorists who believe that mathematics is a creation of man, and thus arbitrary and relative, A. Becca Book teaches that the laws of mathematics are a creation of God, and thus absolute.
Absolute? An absolute variable? Excuse me?
A. Becca Book provides attractive, legible, and workable traditional mathematics texts that are not burdened with modern theories such as set theory.
You can scream too, Betsy. This is up your alley.
No set theory for little fundy babies.
So, mathematics are a creation of God and absolute. Well, why is it then that God gave the Romans all that crap.
Why did he give the Roman? I mean, granted, it does look much more appealing on a watch face. I'll give you that. I like Roman numerals on the watch. What's a watch?
And he gave mathematics to the Sumerians in a different form, and he gave it to the Arabic peoples in a different form.
Shh. Don't tell the A. Becca Book people that we're using Arabic numerals. They'll have to go and oh Jesus.
And why did God give the Mayans zero when he didn't let anybody else have it? Or why did he give the Mayans zero 1,000 years before he let anybody else have it?
Zero is satanic, Bob.
There you go. Then there's the Teacher's Resource Guide to Current Events for Christian Schools, 1998 to 1999, by Bob Jones University Press. Gay people have no more claims to special rights than child molesters or rapists.
I'm trying not to take a break just to scream.
Then this one was about as offensive as the Mark Twain quote. From Economics, Work and Prosperity in Christian Perspective. Should that book even exist if you're a Christian? I mean, just asking.
Global environmentalists have said and written enough to leave no doubt that their goal is to destroy the prosperous economies of the world's richest nations.
That one sent me back off to the archives of JoeBagent.com, where I read, Capitalism is dead, but we're still dancing with the corpse. Also from Economics, Work and Prosperity in Christian Perspective.
Instead of this world unification ushering in an age of prosperity and peace, as most globalists believe it will be a time of unimaginable human suffering as recorded in God's Word. The Antichrist will tightly regulate who may buy and sell.
Oh, son of a bitch, I had no idea. Yeah, clean water, clean air, Texas, Betsy. Right, yeah, that's satanic. Ah, true, Irish Dave. Should we promise a pot in every chicken?
Meanwhile, Ray's defending the kinfolk.
See, we weren't that bad. By today's standards, I just can't think of anything Pope Leo X did that was wrong.
Then, of course, with regard to schools and the pregnancy test, from Bill in Montana.
What? No mention of the impregnator in the manual? Why am I not surprised? These people are this close, holding tip of thumb and index finger, 1/32 of an inch apart, to the dreaded Taliban. I don't think you can fit them in the... I don't think there's that much space, Bill. Fundies is fundies is fundies is fundies. Marty, Dragon Slayer was a documentary. Damn right. Jim, yeah, we have real dinosaurs in their thinking all around us today, even. Marty also observing, wondering if we might get a whole new round of dead teens who were found to be pregnant, or just not to be virgins. You know, honor killings. Ooly, ooly, ooly. Ooly, ooly, ooly. Yeah, I get Jim, what about blow-up dolls? Well, we know the rule of blow-up dolls, don't we, Jim? Just don't bite them in the neck or they'll fart and fly out the window. Huh? Really? And, you know, we talk about this in terms of Louisiana, but guess what? If there's a Christian Gospel Holiness Academy somewhere near you, like there is me, there's every chance in the world that this crap is being taught. And here's the fun part. Parents pay to have their children lied to. And now in the state of Louisiana, the entire tax-paying body of the state is paying to have these lies foisted off on their children. Wow. Just wow. So let's go to the phones. Enough filibustering. Hey, welcome to the program.
Rob?
Yes.
This is Carol in Las Vegas.
Hey, Carol. How you doing?
Okay. I guess as good as can be expected these days.
Hang in there.
Before I get to my point, in the last couple of weeks, you know, you've been talking even more than usual about, you know, mountaintop removal. I was just curious. Have you ever heard of or read any books by Edward Abbey?
I recognize the name, but I don't recognize that I've read. Did I say Redden? Oh, Jesus.
Well, there's a book called Desert Solitaire that actually came out in 1968. And I think with your passion for the situation in Appalachia, I would really recommend, if you have any time, to read that book.
Okay, I have written it down here.
It's nonfiction, and you know, I'm not going to take the time to tell you all about it, but I think it's something that you would really enjoy from the standpoint of identifying with someone who hates the degradation of the environment and what it does to living things and the natural world. Plus, there's politics involved, and he's a really incredible writer. I've read all of his books except one, and I really think you would enjoy reading that. Something you'd really identify with.
Edward Abbey.
Edward Abbey. Yeah, he lived out. He actually grew up in that part of the country, and then after joining, you know, the service in World War II, he off the train and saw the West, and he ended up living most of his life out in Arizona. But anyway, I was going to make kind of a shocking statement here.
Okay.
As a lifelong Democrat and a closet socialist and even small-c communist, I'm going to have to vote for a Republican for president this time.
Oh, you mean Obama? And,
exactly. Yeah, I couldn't even fool you, could I? but you know, in all seriousness, Bill Maher, for whatever he is or isn't, I think some years back during the Bush administration really nailed it when he said that the Democrats have moved to the right and the Republicans have moved into the insane asylum. Do you remember that?
I do, because that's absolutely true.
And I would even go a little further in that those of us, probably like yourself and most people who listen to this program, you know, the Democratic Party has really been leaving most of us for quite a while, even though there are a few Democrats in the House who do a good job and they do their best, and they are actually Democrats, but the majority have pretty much sold out. But my point is, I think we need to start calling the Republican Party what it really is, what I call it, and really piss off a lot of people. I just call it the American Nazi Party.
Yeah, that kind of goes hand in hand with the way I describe them as being fascists. Mm-hmm. I shy away from calling them Nazis, just because I think that is one, as I've noted in the past, I think that's one of the problems we face, is that we Americans think that it can't possibly be fascist if it doesn't have snappy black uniforms with peaked caps. Okay,
mm-hmm.
and when we say Nazi, you know, we close a lot of doors, rightly or wrongly. We close a lot of doors, and we make people see visions of people in snappy black uniforms with peaked caps goose stepping.
Go ahead.
And so, consequently, I like fascist. And fascist itself is enough of a door closer because, well, you know, it's American. It can't possibly be fascist. You know, horse feathers. As I've said before, Antonin Scalia's father was the president or leader or maximum dictator or whatever they called themselves of the Mussolini fan club before World War II. He really, really was.
No, and as someone who's half Italian and even part German, I can use those words and, you know, not be racist against Italians or Germans because I am part Italian and part German.
Right.
And the rest is Scotch-Irish. I think you said something about you are also. But
yes.
Anyway, but, you know, when I was sitting here on the phone listening, and you were talking about all this nonsense about Bob Jones University, which was pretty amazing.
Can you imagine what an acid trip it must be to spend 4 years? And I'm not talking about good acid either. I'm talking about the brown acid, the bad stuff that they were talking about at Woodstock. Can you imagine what a bad acid trip it is to be at Bob Jones University for 4 years of your life?
Well, obviously, to even go there, you would have to have been, you know, brainwashed totally and completely by your family or your church or whatever it is, even to go to a place like that. But, you know, I agree with you by using the word Nazi and even fascist. You know, you tend to close doors. Although, you know, a couple of weeks ago on your show, you started using the word a little bit. I thought that was very brave. You know, I can't remember exactly where you used it, but I remember you talking about it. But when I'm talking to people now, if I talk to them at all, you know, I say, look, why don't the people on Fox News, why doesn't Rush Limbaugh, why don't all these people have the guts to just put the armband on, you know, with the white circle and the black swastika, because that's who they are. But even though they don't, everybody needs to realize they may not wear the swastika on the outside, but it's in their heart.
Sure it is.
And what we're witnessing today and what you just talked about with Bob Jones University and in the run-up to this election, how anybody who's intelligent in this country, cannot deep down know this about these people is beyond me.
And, you know, maybe this is the debate that goes almost 24/7 in my own mind. Maybe it would be cured with medication. I don't know, Carol. But I keep thinking that if we just find the right combination of vocabulary, we can make folks see light. But the other side of me goes, no, because if anything that involves more than two syllables probably will not reach. Because the other way you can describe it is totalitarianism, authoritarianism, plutocracy, oligarchy, and every one of those requires too many syllables for most of America. Because remember, as I think Texas Betsy pointed out in my conversation with Dr. Bill last night, most people read on a sixth grade level. You know, the average newspaper, even the New York Times, is written at a middle school level of English.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And how do you talk about authoritarianism? How do you talk about fascism
to people who are bereft both of history and fundamental grammar?
Well, you can't break into the mind of someone who can't think. You know, it's just impossible. Trust me, I've tried to do it for a long, long time. You know, I was going to ask you a question. Back when I watched TV, I don't know if you remember, I haven't watched TV since 2004, but I was watching the History Channel, which had a lot of World War II, Hitler things going on, and a statistic that they just said totally blew me away, and I'd never heard of it before, that when Hitler took power in Germany, something like 17% of the German people, only 17% were actually members of the Nazi Party.
That doesn't surprise me.
And when I heard that, you know, I went to college and I've read a lot all my life. I never heard that before. And I thought, wow, that just showed you how dangerous enough propaganda could be, because all they have to do is get a small percentage of the population. And look what's happening right now with Romney and all his money, who couldn't win an actual election. There's no way he could win a fair election. But there's a lot of money being spent, and I don't think they're spending it, you know, for a losing cause.
No, they're in earnest about that. There's no doubt whatsoever. But by the same token, consider the what was put forward. Well, I heard it yesterday, and I think we talked about it last night with Dr. Bill. We talked about it together. That 17% you just mentioned,
mm-hmm.
probably no more than 20% of the American people will select the next president.
Mm-hmm.
So is it that far different?
Well, that's exactly my point. You know, that's what's so scary to me about this whole thing. And, you know, a lot of times on the program, you know, there's some talk about conspiracies and all of this kind of stuff. And I know that you've heard of, because I've heard you talk about it, about the plot against FDR.
Yes.
And I only learned about that in the 90s on a book I read by Jim Mars. And when I'll never forget reading that, and I thought, wait a minute. I went to college. I took a lot of history. I've read a lot of books about history. How could I have never heard about that? Then I even asked my mother. She died in 2009, and she was a huge FDR fan, read I don't know how many books about the FDR administration and all of that. She had never heard of it. And my point is, when people start talking of doubting conspiracies sometime and all that, just think, most of the population of this country had never heard about something that just happened back in the 30s.
Yeah, that could have changed it. And you know, even the intent of something like that can change the course of history. It doesn't have to succeed. And just as a, for instance, along the same lines, consider this. Last night, Jim called, and he had sent me a link to the great propaganda documentary series, Victory at Sea. And it's called Beneath the Southern Cross. And I watched it because I grew up watching it, and I was glad to be reminded of it. And, of course, it uses a lot of archival German propaganda footage. And there was an account there of the chasing of the German pocket battleship Graf Spee into Montevideo Harbor in South America.
Mm-hmm.
And along with that footage, there was a picture of, and it talked about how German industry in South America banded together in support of the Reich.
Mm-hmm.
And there was footage that showed some sort of warehouse or receiving station or, you know, some sort of industrial presence. And blazoned across the front of it was the word Thyssen. And frankly, my German being a little spotty, I don't know if that's Tyson or Thiessen. But I know what the guy's first name was. Fritz. And I'm probably, little light bulbs are going off for you right now. Fritz Thiessen or Tyson was known
in the run-up to the Second World War as Hitler's angel. He was literally his financier.
Mm-hmm.
Fritz Thyssen, in turn, had a relationship in the United States. His money people were a Wall Street house called Brown Brothers Harriman.
Mm-hmm.
Brown Brothers Harriman had a young, up-and-coming junior executive by the name of Prescott Bush.
Bush, that's right.
Prescott Bush Sr.
Mm-hmm.
They were his money agents for funneling American-generated Wall Street capital into his accounts, which he then, in turn, used to finance the building of the war machine of the Third Reich. There is a direct, bright line that runs between the Bush family and the rise of the Third Reich. Now, I recognize that from seeing that name across that building in that archival footage.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not me saying that I'm something special. It is, no, it's really not, because you would have seen this in record. But how many Americans, Carol, how many Americans would see that footage and think of the same thing and make the same historical connections? I would hazard to get, it would not be 0.1%.
That's why we have a media that makes sure that people don't read, that don't learn history. These days, it's so much bigger than it seemed to be, but there were radio shows and all of that in the past. Ronald Reagan was part of that. But exactly the point you're making, and if anybody wants to read a book that really gets into that, The Rise of the Fourth Reich by Jim Mars also is really incredible in tying a lot of that stuff together. And even where
the Thyssen business is concerned, you know, it used to be in America, when you stepped into an elevator, you saw on the footboard of the car. I used to joke that it was the name of the American god of elevation, Otis.
Yep.
But no, in fact, it was a huge American corporation that manufactured elevators, the Otis Elevator Company. Well, now, if you'll notice, they're all being replaced by Thyssen Krupp. If you go into, I mean, I've seen them at Berea College. I've seen them. Thyssen Krupp elevators are not so slowly replacing every last Otis elevator in the United States. And the first time I saw Thyssen Krupp, I had a chill run down my spine, because what a marriage of two industrialist names of horror and blight. The Krupp company that manufactured some of the most brutal artillery the world has ever known, and Thyssen, who financed the rise of Adolf Hitler, and now they are replacing an iconic American corporation. Not that I bear any love for American corporations, but, you know, it's almost impossible to... Did that make any sense? But boom, there it is. Otis is gone. You know, I don't recall any Otis howitzers, although there may, or any, you know, Otis battleships, although there may have been. But you don't have to dig too far in history to find out the legacy of Thyssen and Krupp.
Well, what you're talking about right now is exactly what Jim Mars is writing about in that book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich. The fact that even though Adolf Hitler was killed and some of his highest officers and all of that, we did not destroy completely the Nazi machine by any means. And when it came to banking and finance and all of that kind of stuff. But, you know, today I don't have as much time as normal, so I've got to go in a minute. I hate to bounce around like this.
But, oh, it's okay.
But, you know, in light of the last couple of weeks with the shootings and everything like that, and, you know, people again talking more about certain types of gun control and all of that, which I do agree with, even though I do own firearms, and I am not a hunter. But, and that's a whole other story, but it hit me in listening to your program and a couple of others in the discussions and people talking about it, especially this program, that in my opinion, the only way out of some of these things, and especially when it comes to gun violence and all that, is somehow we have to get back on a track of humans actually evolving, you know, emotionally and in the head.
Yeah, but shoot, we can't even talk about that for being screamed down by the fundamentalists.
Well, obviously, but my point is, I think the reality of all of our problems, including violence and all that, it's just going to have to come somehow through evolving where people don't want to pick up guns anymore, where they become obsolete, not because they're forced to, but we just, we grow above that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, yeah, where we're not going to study war no more. That, yeah. And that's, you know, that's the forever question. How do we get there?
Well, I just think that, you know, someone like yourself and most people who have families and have children, I didn't have children. But I think the stress that people that have families have to be going through, especially these days, with all that's going on, you know, to me, that's about the only answer that really counts, if you understand what I'm saying.
I do.
That when I was, you know, when I was in college in the early 70s, and through those periods, it seemed like to me that people, they wanted to grow, they wanted to evolve, they wanted to get smarter, they wanted to get better. And unfortunately today, which started about the middle 80s, it's just gone completely the other way.
And again, as I noted, by design.
Totally.
You know, there's a bunch of Joe Bajans. I've been mentioning him lately just because I've been missing him, I guess. A bunch of Joe Bajans' essays have been gathered together in a book, and they're available at Amazon. Waltzing at the Doomsday Ball. It's and you can also read them at his website. I highly recommend it because just like listening to Bill Hicks remains relevant, so too does Joe Bajant, even though he's gone. That's the way it is with the great writers and the great artists. You know, looking at a 1,000-year-old painting or a 500-year-old painting remains relevant because it speaks to the essence of where we are and where we're going. So too does great writing. I have a feeling that Joe Bajant will have relevance 1,000 years from now. And what, you know, what he offers up about that question of where are we going? How did we get here? And the answers, you know, the answers are there. The answers are discernible and definable. But then we run into trouble when we try to start, you know, it's one thing to say we're in the swamp and here's how we got to the swamp. Those are both very important. And then you have to start figuring out, and Joe did, how do we get out of the swamp? Because,
well, that's the question.
Because it's a big swamp.
Mm-hmm.
It's as big as the North American continent itself, I fear. But by the way, you got a little amen in the chat room on Desert Solitaire, so that's definitely going onto the list. Thank you very much for the recommendation.
Well, yeah, I've got to run, but trust me, I've probably read that book 15 times in my life, and I read all of Edward Abbey's books. They're excellent, but I think that's the starting point. But I think some of the frustration and the passion you feel for your situation with mountaintop removal, I really think this book will hit home with you. And
well, I'll put it on the Kindle, and because I'll bet it's available. And if it's not, I'll find a hard copy. Thank you very much. I'm awfully glad you called in, and do so anytime, please.
Okay, well, you guys take care.
All right, thanks a lot. Bye now.
Bye.
Carol calling from Nevada. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Bill Brackwell in San Diego. Hi, I'm still alive.
Well, you know, again, I say this to people I haven't heard from in a while. You'll be surprised. You might not even believe it, but I was thinking about you the other day.
Oh, I always think about you, have you on. In fact, you came on last night after Mike Malloy on my stream, so it was cool to hear you come on after Mike. Absolutely crazy. These Christian fundamentalists are mentally ill, and I don't understand why we're not calling it a mental illness now. And I've gone past the point of being afraid to say the word Nazi to people or fascist, because when I talk to them about that, I bring out the 14 common threads of fascism. I explain to him the Nazi party. The word Nazi is short for National Socialist. I've just had it with these insane people. And the reason we're in the quagmire we're in, the insanity that we have in this country with textbooks teaching people that dragons were alive. By the way, that clip you played, is that on a YouTube?
What, from Bill Hicks?
Yeah, the one that was extremely funny about...
That's just look up Bill Hicks dinosaurs on the YouTube.
Oh, my God, that was funny. But anyhow, you know, with all these people, they're just absolutely insane, and I just don't have tolerance for them anymore. They're sick, and I can't stand them, and I let them know that. But a funny thing happened at the Chick-fil-A protest here, which was, well, that's another topic for another time, because that annoyed me. But I was talking to some Christian protesters that had the Jesus signs, and they told me, you know, they're really disgusted, too, with some of the fundamentalist Christians and the evangelicals. They said they're not really part of what we want to teach. They're not part of us. They even said the Tea Party is not part of Christ, which really surprised me. But the problem here is nobody's speaking out. There's no anti-war protest, even though we're still in Afghanistan. People are afraid to speak out against these insane people, and we just cower. We just let the bully come, and that's what happened in Germany. It was a slow process. A lot of people think that everything with Nazi Germany and Hitler happened in the 1940s, that he just woke up one day and decided to invade everybody, but that didn't happen. It was a slow process, and one of the processes that happened was the propaganda. The propaganda in the media in Germany early in the 30s is what started.
Oh, sure, Phil. And you'd probably have to get one of these upper echelon right wingers strapped into a chair with a loading dose of sodium pentothal to get it out of them. But they, you know, if you did, you'd probably get them to admit, sure, I read the manual. Yeah, absolutely. The Nazis nailed it to the ground, and we've been using every tactic they described, you know, because they have.
Every single thing down the wire. And that's the biggest problem here, the propaganda and the apathy from people. I don't know what the hell happened with people. It's like, well, okay, Obama's in. Now, I supported more progressive candidates in the election. I really didn't buy Obama because I looked at who he was, and I knew he was probably a good Republican candidate, but not really a good Democrat candidate. But we had our chance, first of all, you know, to not buy what the media sold us about Obama and get a good progressive candidate in the White House. We had that chance to do that. So we didn't do that, and we waited and waited for hope and change, you know, for Guantanamo to close and for them to pull the troops out of Afghanistan and change things. That didn't happen.
Well, and remember, I mean, I want us to be factually accurate, Phil, when we talk about things like Guantanamo. I was actually sitting in Washington, D.C. on the day after the inauguration when Barack Obama signed that executive order closing Guantanamo. Barack Obama did not fail to close Guantanamo. The Congress of the United States stopped the closure of Guantanamo.
Okay, yeah, I stand corrected with that. I didn't know he did that.
Yeah, I mean, it was literally the first thing he did. And the Congress had hissies. We talked about, and it's, you know, it's all very well documented. They were going to use an unused Illinois prison to, no, we can't put those people in Illinois.
Because if they're in the States, then they might have to have a trial.
Then they might have rights.
And rights.
And that was part of, and remember when we were going to actually try to put the Constitution to its intended use and try, what was it, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed? We were going to try him in New York like justice demands. And New Yorkers and God knows who all else. Oh, no, we can't do that. That would be dangerous. Justice under the Constitution would be dangerous. Well, hell yes, justice is dangerous. Democracy is dangerous. Freedom is very dangerous. But do you want to be free, or do you want to be securely fascist? There's that word again, right?
Well, I don't apologize for it because this is a fascism. If you look again at the 14 common threads of fascism and go down the list of it, and this is for thinking people. This isn't for people that think Jesus put the Loch Ness Monster into the water over there.
Yeah, right. No, you're safe saying this stuff around the Horn family.
Yes. You know, for thinking people, you look at that and you see everything. And your caller before said, you know, they don't wear the armbands and everything. Well, they do wear one of them. The little American flag lapel pin, that's their little sign. And that was part of what, matter of fact, I think that was in the first one of the comments.
Right, and that's why I mentioned this foo-frall over Gabby Douglas, is that her last name? The gymnast?
Yeah, oh, Gabby, yeah. She's not wearing red, white, and blue.
Yeah, she's wearing a communist leotard.
You know, F me running. Really, we're down to talking about a 16-year-old's leotard as the determining factor of whether America is sufficiently patriotic. I mean, if you've gotten to that point, aren't you in real trouble?
Well, they are, and you know,
that's easily subbed into one. I forget which number it was, but one of those 14 defining characteristics of fascism. Well, she's not.
Yeah.
She's not wearing a flag-themed leotard.
Yeah, well, yes, it's all got to have a flag in it. Well, I don't want that. Maybe she didn't want that. Maybe she thought that uniform was pretty and it would look nice in the competition. But then when they're done with the competition, the uniforms that, by the way, were not made in the United States, all have, guess what colors? Red, white, and blue on them.
Yeah.
Their uniforms that they run around in and stuff and use when they're not flipping around in a bar. But it just goes to show you idiocy like that with everything that's happening. People worry about that on Fox News, worry about what color leotard this girl has. Yeah, this shows the insanity of this country. Yeah, with the election now, there's too much of this crap with Obama and Romney not releasing his tax returns. Y'all realize this is a diversion for y'all.
Oh, well, I'd kind of like to see the fact that the suckers paid less taxes than I have in the last 10 years, but maybe I am being diverted.
It's a diversion from paying attention to what's really happening in some of these congressional races in the Senate.
Absolutely. The entire presidential election is a diversion. While we're worrying about Willard, the Republicans are going about the business of consolidating themselves in the House and getting the Senate. And again, let's be extremely optimistic and hope that Obama is reelected. Can you imagine the flood tide of absolute psychotic, psychopathic weirdness that's going to land on his desk? And we're going to count on him to have the guts to veto it left and right. With a Republican Senate and a Republican House. No, Jesus.
That's not going to happen. And yesterday they had the primary in Missouri for the Republican primary, and this guy named what's his name here, Todd
Akins. Yeah.
Won it. Now, this is an insane bastard, too. He believes Medicare is unconstitutional. Let's see, here's a couple of things. He also called for the repeal of the 17th Amendment, which allows voters, rather than the state legislatures, to choose who represents in the Senate. A while back, Akin said that the heart of liberalism is really a hatred for God. Akin once claimed after NBC broadcast accidentally omitted "under God" from the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah.
You know, there's more with this guy, but this is one of these insane bastards that's with the Tea Party, that's a fascist. I'll say the word, fascist. Nazi. You know, wants to make sure that we have textbooks in the schools, probably, too. He'll back that, too. Yep. Jesus created everything. We're only a thousand years old.
Yep.
But the thing is, you know, with the stuff that's going on now with Romney and tax returns, MSNBC that's supposed to be leaning forward, every program on there from from Maddow to
You know, the funny thing is, generally, I can say generally.
After, oh, go ahead.
I was interested to say, I can generally say that the only time I'm leaning forward is when I'm vomiting.
I vomit every day, unfortunately, because of the medication I take and because of what's happening in the world. But yeah, all these programs are covering the same thing. Romney did this. New Romney lied. Okay, we know that. Those of us on the left, those of us that can think, no, he's a lying sack of crap. We know that. We know the way the Republicans only can win an election is through disenfranchising voters and lying to the stupid. What needs to be put out there is things like this Aiken guy. And some people...
Well, and consider,
that,
you know, consider the... Consider the teabag darling that won the Texas primary a week or so ago, that Cruz guy. He's being hailed as a conservative genius and a formidable opponent. The guy, he's a right-winger. He doesn't have enough sense to tie his own shoelaces unless he's got a gun held to the shoelaces. That's just how they are. I mean, I'm sorry.
And they all claim we're Christians, but these bastards... do the opposite of what Christ would have done. You know, like, for instance, they want to cut Medicaid, food stamps, entitlement programs. Now, what Christ would do that? I mean, if he was here now, I heard a comedian say it as well a little while back. If he came now, if Jesus came down here now and he was walking around, first of all, Limbaugh would be on the air talking about, he's a liberal, right? Left-wing liberal, leftist. And they would crucify him again. And little girls, instead of wearing crosses around their necks, would be wearing little electric chairs.
You know what? That is I've heard that has gotten some. I've heard that a couple of times, Phil. And just because you might find it interesting, you know who first started that joke? You know how old that remark is? That remark goes all the way back to the 1950s and Dick Gregory, back before he was a comedian, before he became an activist. Yeah. But it keeps having currency because it's true. You know, a brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer with the dust of the road on him walks into some well-heeled Baptist megachurch. I mean, I've got a story here. You know the mosque in Murfreesboro, Tennessee?
Yes.
Okay, well, I've got a story here about how the next-door Baptist church has nailed 17 crosses into the ground to remind them that their God is stronger than Allah.
Oh, of course, yeah. War on religion. That was a war on religion against us. War on religion. Yeah, it's okay if somebody says...
Because their God is so putrid and weak that he can't even tolerate having another God next door. You know, I'll at least give it to the Indians. And the Hindu faith. Oh, you've got a god? Well, come on in. We'll set him right next to these other 132 gods. Lots of gods.
That's what killed me about the shooting with the Sikh mosque, you know, or the Sikh temple, you know. It's such a peaceful, loving group of people. Everything somebody that calls themselves Christian should try to be. And it was just heartbreaking that once again these people were targeted as being Muslims, you know, thanks to Michelle Obama, or Bachman, rather.
Yeah, well, that's been going on since September 11th. It was just a matter of days after the attacks of September 11th that a Sikh cabbie was dragged out of his car and beaten to death, or shot, or some such.
And it's been since 9/11 that we've started this Islamophobia. But again, you want to pair, and yeah, I get in trouble for paralleling everything that happened in Nazi Germany and with the Hitler crime family, but again, who's the scapegoats now? Islamics. Who's the other group?
Well, right, and just to remind folks, when I was in Germany a couple of months back, guess what the German fascists, who are on the rise, guess who they're mad at now? There's not enough Jews in Germany to get a real good angry at. So necessarily, they want to throw all the Muslims out. You know, fascism is fascism is fascism is fascism.
It's crazy.
They had a sticker that showed a woman in a hijab, and the motto was "Unser Land in unsere Hand." Our country in our hands. And then there was another keine Minaretten, no minarets. And on one of the days that we were traveling around the countryside, I looked off in the distance, and lo and behold, there was a mosque. And I said, gee whiz, look, a mosque in Germany. And yet, Germans continue to successfully be Germans. And my lovely host said, yeah, funny, ain't it? Actually, they said, yeah, funny, isn't it? And I said, yeah, because they understood my irony. And the German culture, German civilization was not by any means falling apart because there was a mosque somewhere in Nordrhein-Westphalia. And there's probably mosques all over. They're not allowed to do their call to prayer from the top of the mosque. No speakers, no hollering, no screaming, you know, none of that. It's just a place of worship. The same with the Sikh Center in Oak Creek, Wisconsin. It's just a worship center. You know, they keep their doors open at all times. They feed the hungry at that Sikh worship center. They feed the hungry. They do what Jesus told his followers to do, but 99% of them can't be bothered to do. And so the Sikhs are doing it.
It's absolutely unbelievable. But again, it goes back to this apathy we have. And perhaps, you know, not the people in the chat room and the people listening right now, but there's so many people that were energized, you know, before this election. I don't know if we just sat down and said, we're just going to sit and wait, maybe a second term, it'll be different or something, but just nobody speaks up anymore, and it seems like everybody's afraid of the bully. Well, let me tell you something, okay? I'm a gay person. You know I'm a gay person. Been out since I was outed when I was 12. I learned in high school the only way you stand up to bullies and insane people is confronting them. And once I confronted the bullies, that was it. They knew I could kick their ass at that point. Nobody bothered me. And it's time that we start standing up. We need to start telling people, yeah, this is a mental illness. These people, these insane fundamentalist religious people, they're mentally ill. They should not have their children. Their children should be taken away if they're sending them to some creepy-ass school. You know, 6-7-year-old kids, 8-year-old kids, teenage kids being taught this crap that, yeah, the dinosaurs lived 1,000 years ago with humans. Science is just something made up. Yeah, that's child.
By Satan to confuse the unbelievers. Yes, absolutely.
A child has a right to learn, to have knowledge, to grow.
You do not have to beat a child and leave bruises in order to be abusing one. Abusing the developing mind of a child is as great abuse, as great an abuse as there is.
That's mental abuse.
Yeah, and that's the stuff that really lasts. That's why I describe myself as a recovering Southern Baptist, not a former Southern Baptist. Okay? I'll never be over it. I'll never get well.
And there are a lot of, you know, Christian churches, you know, even here in San Diego, there are a number of congregations and stuff like the Episcopalians and a few other independent churches that are really good people that really try and reach out and practice what Jesus preaches. They don't go around and kind of shove their ideology down your throat. You know, that's another thing I hate. You know, I'm going all over the place here today because there's so much stuff in my head. But, you know, you always hear what the gay issue is. You're shoving your stuff in our face. You know, who shoves what into my face? Who shoves what into my face? You're shoving your Bible and your interpretation into my life. I'm not shoving anything in your face. I'm just trying to live my life.
Yeah, but you know what? Just as a for instance, you mentioned Missouri a few minutes ago, Phil.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had a right to pray amendment on the Missouri ballot Tuesday. And 82% voted in favor of this constitutional amendment. Their supporters said it was for the purpose of protecting the religious liberty of residents and students by allowing them to publicly practice their religion. In other words, the amendment protects the rights of Christians to get up in our faces with their phony baloney. And, you know, frankly, I have never seen an Episcopal getting all radical on the sidewalk. I've never seen the United Churches of Christ or a Unitarian or a Congregation. I've never seen any of that. It's always the Baptists and the Church of Christers and the to some extent the Methodists and the radical Presbyterians and the Westboro people and yada yada yada. They're the ones who want to walk around with their hands in the air screaming about their devotion to Jesus and violating at the same time the very words that Jesus said about praying to your Father in private. Unlike the Pharisees who go about loudly in the streets, for they have their reward already.
And you can't have an intelligent conversation with these people. You can't know a little bit about the Bible and what Jesus talked about and bring out these points. Now, normal, sane people will stand there and say, you're right. Instead, what I usually get from them, yeah, but here it says, and it's some obscure little passage. And that's why I call this a mental illness. They're delusional, first of all. If you can't understand what science is, and you're so hell-bent on what you believe in, that you want to run around saying the Earth is 6,000 years old, we walked around with dinosaurs 1,000 years ago, and all the other examples you said, that's delusional. It's time for this to be called a mental illness. And how dare we talk about fundamentalist in Islam? How dare we talk about that when we've got Christian Taliban fundamentalists here?
Right, and all of this, the Missouri stuff, everything, as Onward to Dystopia from the chat room is noting, Phil, he says, these followers of the Prince of Peace hide behind the First Amendment in order to use that as an excuse to harass us and try to make everybody else's life almost as miserable as their own. Hear, hear.
Well, they misinterpret that again. Yes, we have freedom of religion in America. That means I can choose what religion I want. I can choose if I want to be an Episcopalian. I can choose if I want to be a Wiccan. I can choose if I want to be an agnostic. I can choose if I want to be an atheist. Freedom of religion means freedom from religion sometimes as well. But you can't make that point to them either. But this really, the story you were reading in the last hour about the Louisiana and the textbooks from Bob Jones and the mere fact that parents are paying to have their children taught all this fiction really makes me sick. But look at the Bible, you know. There should be a beginning part of the Bible that says all characters in this book are fictional. Any resemblance to any living people is totally coincidental. That's how the Bible should start, because people don't understand how it was written.
Or as the Bugs Bunny cartoons put it, any resemblance to persons living or dead is a crying shame.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, from anything you try to tell these people. The story of Sodom. I always try to explain to them about the story of Sodom. But the story of Sodom and the lesson in that was it wasn't a sin of homosexuality or butt-screwing. What it was the people in the town of Sodom were not hospitable to their neighbor. So then I point out there's something in one of the Gospels that Jesus sends his apostles out to other towns, wants them to knock on the door and talk to them about what he's talking about. So he said to them, if they don't open the door, they don't want to hear what you have to say, turn around, wipe your feet, and their sin will be greater than the sin of Sodom. Now, when they knocked on the door to get some food and talk about what Jesus talked about, was anybody having any gay sex at that point?
Right, no. Exactly, yeah.
But you can't get that through to these people. And then they'll go back to some other thing and random stuff. So they're insane. These are insane people. We need to start speaking out about it. And these other churches, like you mentioned and I mentioned, need to really start coming out more about that and condemning this. Because not only is it ruining their Christ and what they're doing and the polar opposite of it, but it's causing a lot of damage. And now we're seeing the damage getting into state legislatures and possibly into the House of Representatives and Senate. And Mike Malloy made a good point last night with me. He said, in some ways, he kind of hopes that the Republicans do take control of Congress, so then maybe more Americans will see just how batshit crazy these people are.
It's happened. Look, George Bush had a Republican House and a Republican Senate at one point, and it didn't make much difference because we got ourselves Democratic majorities, and the Democratic majority in the House was gone in the blink of an eye.
And the Democratic majority didn't do very much as well. You know, I'm still annoyed that nobody looked at the fairness doctrine. Nobody looked at fairness in broadcasting. Nobody looked at the propaganda. It just blew my mind that nobody for 2 years did anything about that. What is it? It's like about 800, at least, I forget what I read about, at least 800 conservative radio stations around the United States with barely 100 progressive stations. Here in San Diego, we have nothing. Nothing. We have 3 conservative stations. We have 3 sports talk stations. We have Christian Taliban radio that comes from here and across the border in Mexico. Nothing. So what we've done here in San Diego, we've got a license now for broadcast. We're going to get a transmitter up when we can, and it will be streaming. It's a grassroots sort of thing. And we've started a radio station here now, like they did in Phoenix when they lost this. So that will be on soon as well.
Well, best of luck with all of that, Phil. Sincerely, from the bottom of my heart, the best of luck to you.
Well, it had to be done because people are being fed propaganda.
And, you know, if I could do this show without saying the magic dirty words, I'd say run this and run with it. You know, good luck and God bless you. Or Flying Spaghetti Monster or nothing or whatever.
because it's crazy. It's crazy. We are being fed the propaganda. People are swallowing it. And this is why people are dumbed down.
You've got to be contending in the marketplace of ideas with an alternative to the Rushes and the Hannitys and so forth, or else people have no other choice, because everybody wants to feel like, you know, they're part of a group. You know, we're humans. For all this rugged individualism and up by the bootstraps bullshit, everybody wants to feel like that they're part of a group of common concern and collegiality and tribal, you know. And as long as progressive, liberal, whatever you want to call us, folks are not contending in that marketplace, then people are naturally going to gravitate to the side that is on the field. Phil, it's awfully good to talk to you. Don't be such a stranger, all right?
I'll try not to. What happens is the medication I'm on now for the medical problems I have, when I have to take the dose, I fall asleep. not because the program is boring, but
No. I put a lot of people to sleep. So don't worry. Don't blame it on the drugs, Phil.
I got to listen to you later on when it's not the live portion of the show. But I'll try and skip the medication from time to time as we're getting closer to the election. And my best to the family as well.
Thank you. I will convey that to Agnes. She'll appreciate it.
Okay. Good talking with
you. Take care, Phil. Bye now.
Bye.
Calling from San Diego. That's our old buddy Phil. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, sir.
Hey, Jim. How are you?
Pretty good. I enjoyed your last conversation with Phil.
Phil's been around for a while, and I think he sees things pretty clearly.
Well, I concur, and I wish him the best of luck with his protocol of medications.
Indeed.
They can be extremely... Well, if they crown, so they crucify.
Indeed.
That's for damn sure. And, you know, the Episcopal Church has long been a bastion of protection against a lot of these right-wing fundamentalist peoples and these mega churches. And, you know, I would think that if Jesus Christ were to return to earth today and walk into one of them, like Peter Popoff, and I don't know if you've ever seen some of these guys that send out prayer cloths and magic water and all this other kinds of stuff. He would say to them what he said when he went into the temple. You know, get out. You have made of my father's house a den of iniquity. That's exactly what he would say. I mean, these people, in my opinion.
And then they'd re-crucify him, Jim.
Yeah, and humble, although it is, you know, basically, they've lost any concept of the gospel of Christ and the Sermon on the Mount, and, you know, what was intended by the words in red, and there it is, and there you have it. And, you know, since you've gone all over the board, I'm going to just move on here, referencing the House of Krupp.
Yes.
There's a very good book called The Arms of Crook. It was published in 68 by William Manchester. Now, it did receive a number of negative reviews from Time magazine when it came out, but it definitely outlined the House of Krupp. And, of course, you know, they had armed Germany ever since the 30 Years' War. That was their business.
And the 30 Years' War was when?
Oh, 1630.
Yeah, see, I thought so. That's long about Peace of Westphalia time and all of that stuff, right?
To 1648 or something like that. And, you know, that was their business. And
they were good at it.
Yeah, they were very good at it. As a matter of fact, half the appliances in my kitchen are made by Krupp.
Right. I've had Krupp coffee makers.
Yeah. And
I've often wondered when I've had them, I've often wondered when they were going to send a shell screaming across the living room. You know?
No, they're not going to do that. I think they learned their lesson back in World War II. But, you know, it's strangely enough, going back to the Nazi period, when Hitler finally gained access to power, only 37.4% of the population of Germany voted for him.
Right.
Back in 33-34. And then, of course, you know, by managing the levers of power, he came to power and destroyed a very honorable nation into a weapon of death and destruction, and one that will forever, in many eyes, be, acquainted with the genocide of Nazi ideology.
And you know, it's hard for me, at least, not to contemplate this, because of course a couple of days ago was the anniversary of the beginning of the bloodbath of 1914, the 98th anniversary.
Oh, you mean the August 4th, the declaration of war between the Central Powers and the Entente Cordiale?
Right.
Yeah.
And my good friend Eugene Finnerman, who writes over at FinnermanWorks.com, your RDA of irony, pointed out that had Germany actually prevailed in that conflict, then arguably you don't get Hitler.
Well, Bob, the thing about it is,
and considering what a conflagration that was, that's a bitter thing to contemplate.
Well, you know, one of the principal questions on my area exams from masters was the Fritz Fischer thesis, and basically it was that German aims prior to World War I were business and not military. Now, the Fritz Fischer thesis is something you need to look into. I can't say you need to do anything, but I wish that you would.
Send me an email and I'll look it up and do some research, because that era fascinates me.
Yeah, the Germans were simply to, you know, what they wanted to do was to replicate what the English had done in the previous decades and establish a business community and things of that nature. And, you know, the Kaiser, oh, God, he came into this world with a withered arm, and he was an extremely...
insecure yet bombastic individual?
Yeah, he was. As a matter of fact, even when Queen Victoria was dying, he made the point of grabbing her and holding her as she breathed her last breath, and she had often referred to him as one of the worst badly brought up sons of her generation, because he was her grandson.
And yet his lifelong wish was to visit Paris.
Brady didn't get to do it.
Yeah, no, he missed the ticket.
Yeah, he sure did.
But it's hard to contemplate, and yet many historians have, the fact that only out of the ashes of the German defeat are we able to get the rise of an Adolf Hitler.
Well, but you know, the Kaiser, in many respects, I mean, he was a curious dichotomy, because in many respects he was extremely progressive and extremely social-minded. And then he had this military side of him, which I guess was a some type of compensatory behavior, because not being able to shake hands with both arms. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the historians who contemplate such things may well be wrong, because after all, you know, Italy technically was on the winning side of the First World War.
Yeah, they were.
And yet they wound up with Mussolini.
Well, Italy fell on some hard times, and Mussolini with his fascist party, and of course Adolf Hitler with his Nazi party, were able to promise things to people that they desired and that they needed, and they were very beguiling in their efforts and in their accomplishments to so do. They really were. I mean, they were able to do a lot of things. I mean, even today in Italian gift shops, you can find, or when I was there, busts of Mussolini.
I would prefer one that showed him hanging upside down from a gas station. But
No. It's not with the one of him.
No. It's the noble new Caesar, right?
Yeah. It's not anything resembling what happened to Mussolini and his mistress Clara Petacci in, I think, Milan or wherever it was. I think they caught him near Lake Como, but nonetheless they dragged him back and shot him. But you know, his thing was credere, obedire, combattere, believe, obey, fight. And at one time he was a full-time socialist in the beginnings of his political career.
That's the truth.
And of course...
And he got booted.
Yeah, and Hitler, of course, used him as a model. Because, as a matter of fact, at one time in their relationship, Mussolini was sort of like the elder statesman, until Hitler sort of gained ascendancy. And I just wonder how Mussolini may have felt about some of that stuff, because Mussolini initially was not as anti-Semitic as Hitler was, and of course, you know, because of their pact of steel and all that stuff that bound them together into destruction. Well,
among other things, he begged Hitler to reach some sort of an accord after Hitler invaded Germany, invaded Russia. He begged Hitler to find some sort of an accord with the Russians so that they could turn their attentions to fighting a one-front war.
Exactly. And when Hitler began to believe his own propaganda and to sit up on top of his retreat at the Berghof in the mountains, he sort of lost it and thought that he could, you know, obtain the objectives of Barbarossa or Frederick Barbarossa, the Red Beard or whatever, and just began to believe his own stuff, and it's just crazy. And the reason I bring that up is a lot of people in this country are beginning to believe their own stuff. It is no longer just propaganda for the method of obtaining an objective. They are beginning to really believe this stuff.
Yeah, it's this business of American exceptionalism, as it is trumpeted and parroted on Fox News Radio Rwanda, is, you know, it's a 21st manifestation of a longing for manifest destiny in a way, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I guess so. Manifest destiny, I have my problems with it and the way that we treated the American Indians.
Right, I didn't say it was a good thing.
No, it's not a good thing. It wasn't at all. As a matter of fact, Hitler patterned a lot of his stuff after the Americans and their expansion into the North American continent. And also, he patterned his our subjugation of the Sioux Indian tribes and the British giving Indians infected with smallpox blankets as a way to deal with them. And he also got his idea for the concentration camps from the British in the Boer War. I mean, Hitler had a lot of good teachers when he sat down in that prison in Landsberg when he was there for 9 months and began to formulate some of this stuff and to incorporate it into the 25 points of the original Nazi program. And then, of course, he hooked up with the industrial barons and any socialism, or national socialism, sort of went by the board. If you don't believe that, ask Ernst Röhm in the Brown Church on June 30th, 1934, when he went down there and took care of business there. But, you know, it's just incredible how history is run and how people are so ignorant of it. And that's my point tonight. It really is.
It is.
I don't have many points to make tonight. I really don't.
It is a point well made and well taken, though, Jim, and I appreciate it.
Well, you know, if you want to read about the Crook family, read The Arms of Crook. I mean, Manchester has...
Well, William Manchester was a genius.
Yeah, and of course, he sort of, like in The Death of a President and some other things, he opened himself up to a lot of criticism, but nonetheless, his history of The Arms of Crook is...
Well, his American Caesar was brilliant, and it's a great shame that he didn't get to finish all three volumes of his Churchill biography.
Yeah, it's true. You know, it's a funny thing. When Hitler visited the Krupp family at Essen, Bertha Krupp, the matron of the family, refused to receive him. Maybe she had a presentiment of what this man was going to do. And, of course, the Krupp family by that time had run out of... the male side of the family, so they had to have a special law passed, Unholbach, that tied their family, and it's an interesting read. It is, indeed. And, of course, what the Krupps did during World War II when they had their subcamps at Auschwitz-Birkenau. And, well, that's the reason Alfred went to jail for a long time.
Yeah.
But, you know, they had been able to make good coffee makers and other appliances and things like this.
And for all my dismay of seeing the end of Otis, they make a fine elevator.
Yeah, they do. I mean, they are very good at what they do. They're extremely technically advanced. And like I said, aside from forging the German sword for 300 or 400 years, they've made certain contributions. And... what I'm scared of is the fact that they might be called into service again by a more arcane political system, because you have made those observations yourself when you were in Germany recently.
Yes, it was truly chilling. To be told, you know, not to read some article at a distance or at some length, but to sit there and look at light poles in, and you know, we're not talking about Berlin or Munich or Frankfurt, but in tiny German villages, tiny, beautiful, picturesque German villages, to see full-on fascist propaganda stickers posted on the light standards.
Well, Bob, that's where it got started back in the 30s. Berlin was anti-Nazi. Only 1 in 4 Berliners voted for Hitler when he had to... submit himself to the electorate, and he never had any love for Berlin. It was in southern Germany and these small hamlets and small German villages, places like Nuremberg. I mean, why do you think Hitler chose Nuremberg to have his rallies?
Because he was well received there. Absolutely.
Exactly. He was better received, and when Leni Riefenstahl made that film, The Triumph of the Will, you know, it was right into Berlin, and of course that's where they had the yearly homages to Hitler and his paladins, and
and you know, we talked earlier with Phil about the fact that the right wing in this country has lifted wholesale their propaganda theories. You remember when George Bush was shown flying onto the deck of the USS Abraham Lincoln that was parked just out of view of San Diego?
Oh yeah.
Well, that was almost frame by frame out of the airplane sequence of Triumph of the Will.
Yeah, Bush in his flying suit, in which...
you know, at least Leni Riefenstahl had the common decency not to have Hitler pad his crotch.
Is that what he did?
Yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
You know,
I mean, look at the photographs. He looks like the promo poster for a porn film.
I know it. I can remember when he visited here, and I was talking to Bill O'Brien about that, and Bill asked me on the radio when he had his show, what would I do if George Bush came to my door? I told him right there on the radio, I said, I wouldn't even open the door unless the Secret Service men crashed it in, and then I would say, you're not welcome here, and show me a warrant. I said that to Bill O'Brien right on his show, and Bill was just kind of taken aback by it, but I'm sorry about that.
Right. I mean, I wouldn't go across the street to see Willard Romney either.
Me neither. Oh, by the way, your favorite person over here.
Titanic Steve.
Titanic Steve. you're such a devil with words.
No, if there's a devil on this call, Jim, it's you.
You're like George and Martha. He said to her, Martha, such a devil with language. But, you know, they were enthusiastic about the bikinis worn by the
beach volleyball contestants.
And you know, enthusiastic about, well, I wonder what those bikinis are made of and how they don't slip. And, you know, I was just wondering when I was going to hear something about when somebody's was drooling into the microphone. And I
dear God, what do you mean they don't slip? If you watch that, they're constantly adjusting, but, you know.
Well, that's what they were going on about, him and some guy named Win from the Trees, who's one of the idiots around here. Brothers running against Nick Rahal, but nonetheless, I just thought to myself, I should make a call in to just say, why don't they just be buck-naked?
I trust they haven't gotten around to criticizing Gabby Douglas for not being for being insufficiently patriotic by wearing a pink leotard.
Oh, that's just absolutely nuts! It's absolutely nuts. I mean, the girl wears what she wants to wear. God knows if anybody has worked hard enough to do what she did and to execute the movements that I've seen, they should be at least not criticized for wearing whatever color costume they wish to wear. I mean, you know, God almighty.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a perfect manifestation of the idiocy that is the right wing and is Fox. You know, if you're going to be a propagandist, don't admit that you're being a propagandist. For this clown to appear on Fox and say, we've lost that jingoistic feeling.
Jingoism. And by jingo, we've got the guns, we've got the money, and we'll do whatever we want to paraphrase what...
Yeah, to take back Constantinople, because nothing rhymes with Constantinople.
Oh, yeah, right, exactly.
But jingoism is not... It's not a positive term. It's pejorative, Jim.
Of course it is. And as far as Constantinople getting the works, in my opinion, that was no one in the business but the Turks. But nonetheless, you know...
And I'm the devil.
Well, we'll split the profits.
It sounds good, Jim.
Should anything be, but I mean, you know, to me the Olympics are very special, and they always have been. I'm not much of a sports enthusiast about football and all that stuff that you.
Well, I like play. You know, I like the original intent. You know, during the original and the real Olympics that ran in the classical world went on for what, 1,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And were only, you know, they were only ceased as a result of agitation from the church. But the one nice, the nicest thing about the original intent of the Olympics was that they came with a general cessation of war. I mean, that the entire Hellenistic and classical world agreed that it was, that they were so important and so sacred, literally sacred.
And on the Olympic bell, I mean, I saw, where was this? Where did I see this? Was it the bell that was used in the 36 Olympics that had a hole in it in Berlin? I don't know, but one phrase I remember from one Olympic site that I visited, I can't pin it down to 36 or 96 or whatever, was, I summoned the youth of the world not to fight, not to kill, but to excel in sport, training, determination, and the desire to excel with their bodies and their minds, and to bring together some type of spiritual brotherhood that is embodied in the United Nations itself. That's what the Olympics mean to me.
Yeah.
It might not mean that to you or anybody else, but that's my personal...
Well, I tell you what, it would be a lot more enjoyable. You've watched some of it.
Oh yeah.
Let's just the remaining moment or so of this conversation, let's engage in a little bit of just full on cattiness. How much work has Bob Costas had?
If you consider sitting in a chair and crossing,
he looks like his face looks like the unwrapped head of Ramses.
Yeah, I'm afraid that the embalmers haven't done too good a job on Bob Costas. And some of the questions that he asked these people,
I don't think he can blink his eyes without his underwear coming up.
Yeah, he's definitely had some work done. And, you know, power to him, you know.
Well, I say catty, but I don't mean it that way. It's kind of pathetic. We are not allowed. Public perception does not allow him to age. He looks like a cross between a bad Egyptian embalming job and a 14-year-old before the acne kicks in. And it's just sad.
Yeah, it is. And you know,
I mean, everybody knew that Howard Cosell was wearing a bad rug. But
yeah.
But we didn't hold it against Howard. We had so much else to hold against Howard.
I remember one Halloween night, they had something with Howard Cosell back in the 70s, and they had a pumpkin with his toupee on it, and it was just absolutely hilarious. And people could laugh at it, you know, and I laughed at it, and I thought, well, okay.
Oh, and by the way, you got a little note in here from Onward to Dystopia in the chat room. You'll be gratified. He says, I learn so much from Jim every time he calls.
Well, I thank him with all my heart.
So you are still fulfilling your mission as an educator, Jim.
Well, I don't have a whole lot of that left, and unfortunately, you know, age attenuates, and it unfortunately it degrades, and I'm not the person I used to be, but I'm trying, and I just hope that other people, not like me, but other people will at least appreciate history and the efforts in which I have tried to appreciate history and the lessons that it's taught. And how we are such.
Well, we're going to have more of it beginning tomorrow morning. We are off to Beckley this evening as soon as the show ends. And I think you'll enjoy the lecture by Dr. Suri on Friday. And tomorrow will be very good, too. Tomorrow evening should be super special because Dr. Bill is going to take on this concept of American exceptionalism.
That's a good thing you've done there. And exposing your audience to academicians, as I sent to you in my email last night about, you know, and their efforts. And I wish them all the success in the world. I really do.
Thank you. I hope we succeed, but one way or the other, and I guess there's merit in this by itself, we will damn sure try. Jim, have a great evening.
And the same to you, sir.
Bye now. And thus we come to the end of this prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. It's time to get out of here. Thank you. Of the 40 we need, we kindly received, and thanks to all of you, 15 and a half of those 40 slots in the Nifty Thrifty 250, and it will enable some bill paying that is very, very badly needed. So thanks again for those of you who hit the PayPal button and who use the snail mail address. Thank you. None of this happens without you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, Gene and Susan, our news ninjas. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to John Fox. Hey, get well. Get over the flu, John. Get to feeling better, brother. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. None of this happens without passing through the servers maintained by the White Rose. PRISM programming will, that's PRISM, P-R-I-S-M, programming will resume at about 9 o'clock Eastern Time tomorrow, both on the PRISM Ustream website and on the Horn stream. So I hope you'll check it out. There's great stuff coming both Thursday and Friday and Monday. Thanks go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acheact.org. Go to acheact.org and learn how you can be a part of the end of the Appalachian apocalypse. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next, only on the Horn.